It is exactly 9:05 on this Saturday morning. Is it the 20th? It's the 26th of November already.
I can't believe it.
I know.
Time flies, eh?
Time flies. November is almost done with. The holidays will be here. And Walter Rassi is here in studio from Renovco. And you know what? I'm going to mention it now. I want to give a shout out to the guy who helped us out. You have a guy that you go to, your go-to guy for installations when it comes to windows and doors. His name is Romy.
That's right.
And he's been at my house now, I think, 3 times, and he recently came and installed. And the things that this guy does on his own, like a major patio door. Romy, do you need a couple of extra hands? No, it's no problem. He installed perfectly, you know, and these things are huge. They're heavy.
That's right.
He's so resourceful. Anyways, he did a fantastic job, cleaned up that, cleaned up all any mess. So we had the patio door installed and kitchen window and bedroom window upstairs.
Romy was born with a window in his mouth.
Some people are born to do something.
Yeah.
And that's what he's.
And don't ask him any other questions except about windows. Doors, windows, no problem. Anything else, he doesn't want to even know about.
He doesn't even hear you.
Yeah. But I mean, it's the guy when it comes to windows and doors, the guy is a genius and beautiful character as well. He's very colorful character to go with it. So
yeah, and he knows what he's doing. Anyways, great service from Romy and Renovco.
Thank you.
514-790-0800. I think we talked a couple of weeks ago about windows and... talk to me a bit about patio doors, because I guess, we didn't want anything fancy. We just got a base model. But is there a lot of range when it comes to patio doors?
Yeah, there is. The best ones now, as far as look and functionality and size, is the lift and slide. Okay? The lift and slide is a hydraulic type patio door. What's great about it is the sizes can go up to 14 feet.
Wow.
Okay? And... the mechanism is it lifts the door, so it's a handle that turns around, lifts the door, and then you can literally with one finger move the door regardless of how big that door is.
Wow.
So that's probably the most, I would say, popular right now. Mm-hmm. It looks great. They're expensive for sure. They're not, as cheap as the regular models, but so if you have a big opening to do in a wall and you want to have a panoramic type of view, these are like perfect windows to have. The great thing about them, because they are lift and slide technology, you don't have any grime and dust and what have you and debris that stays on the tracks, and you can't open the door and you have to take it out and clean it like we have with the regular doors with wheels on tracks and what have you. So that's another thing. It's a lot less maintenance.
Right.
And they look great. And the size now, we can go with very big sizes, which we couldn't do before. We had limitations on how big a door could be.
If your patio door, is getting on in years, is there maintenance that you could do, or just little tune-ups you can do to it? Like, do you have to pay a little more attention to the tracks and clean them out?
Well, that's majorly when you see older patio doors, the problem is opening and closing them. Why? Because of that, the track, the wheels, the grime that gets stuck in there, and you can't open, you can't close, and it becomes much harder. So yearly cleaning becomes more important. The other thing is you need to look at your gap seals, at your caulking, the usual thing you're looking for in a window as well. But as far as patio door is concerned, don't wait until you have trouble opening and closing it to maintain it. If it's an old-fashioned one that you have to take out, clean it on a yearly basis. When you clean your windows, have it done. Maybe spray some WD-40 on the mechanisms and what have you. And, caulking, that's pretty much it. There's not much else you could do, really.
If you want to talk to Walter and pick his brain about any home renovation project or an issue you have at home, call now and grab a line. There's one waiting for you at 514-790-0800. 514-790-0800. It's 1 hour of free advice from a guy with years and years of experience. You were just talking to me off air without mentioning any names so you were approached about a renovation for a kitchen and a bathroom. What do you need from the client when they come to you with this? Like, how much prep work is expected from the client? Do you know what I'm getting at?
That's a great question, actually. There is some prep work that the client should have, at least to give us a general idea of what they want. So if they have pictures, clippings, color, you know, charts, what have you, because there's a huge range. I mean, when a designer comes to see you, she doesn't know if you're in the ultra-modern, eclectic, modern, classic.
So instead of describing it, show pictures.
That's right. You don't have to technically name the design, yeah, but it helps just at least guide us in the right direction. The habits of cooking are important in a kitchen. You know, it's, different cultures cook differently. So, you know, some cultures, they fries, other they do stir fries, other they bake. So that's how also, this is how we can also guide it to design your storage. So, you know, and you know, what would you need more? If you have a lot of pots and pans, we ensure you have a lot of more deep drawers, and our design kind of shifts toward that. So your cooking habits have a lot to do with what we're going to do in your design. It's not a design fit for all kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. It could be also tailored to what you want. So if you're a baker, I mean, we will do enough to have your baking trays, storage for your baking trays. If you use a lot of spices, we'll ensure that you have spice racks. And, you know, it's little things, but they make a big difference in your day-to-day usage of your kitchen. Thereafter is easy. As far as materials and what have you, you come to the design center, you see it, you feel it, you look at it, you watch it, you know, it's life. It's something that you could choose and mm-hmm. palpitate for yourself. A general idea on colors. You don't have to say, I want that white, but you can say, I want whites. And then we can bring you 50 shades of white and you know, get it, you know, get you the right exact shade after that. It's not a problem. But the more you give us from your end, the better creativity the designer could have and kind of get it right from the first time.
I got to jump in here and ask you something, because my wife and I have been in these situations over the years. Sometimes too much choice is too much choice, you know, like it can make your head explode. Sometimes I just want to have three choices brought to me, you know?
That's right. And that's what the designers are really good with. They come in and they kind of understand exactly what you, what a general perception of what you want, and they kind of narrow it down to what really looks amazing and good. So when, instead of showing you 43 different kinds of doors, they narrow down to three doors. Colors, instead of showing you, like in quartz, for example, we have 250 colors, right? And different design and different design and different textures and what have you. So let's say you're going with modern, then I can narrow down the modern colors and then go with these shades and then show you those particular shades. This is how it gets to be more, I would say even more enjoyable, the process.
Have you ever had complaints about kitchen cabinets and how high they are? Because if I had a dollar for every time I was called into the kitchen to get something on the top shelf.
Yeah.
Is that ever an issue, the height of kitchen cabinets?
It's standard, right? So as far as how far your cabinet have to be from your countertop, it's 18 inches. And that's your building standard. You can't go above it, you can't go below it. Now, we've had cases where the homeowners are extremely tall or a bit shorter, and they've asked for you know, kind of adjustments in certain cases. But if you want to just follow the standards, your 18 inches is what you should follow. That's the average height of a human, and it's calculated as such. Now, where it gets to be a bit more complicated is when you have higher ceilings. So let's say you have an 8-foot ceiling, and that's not a problem. But when you have 9-foot and you decided to go with a 42-inch cabinet, then for sure the upper shelves become an issue. And there we always recommend that you store the things that you use once a year, twice a year, things that you use a lot less. You know, and unfortunately, there's always this tall guy in the house that would have to be called in every now and then.
Hello, I'm busy. All right, it's 514-790-0800. I have a text here. I'm going to tell you the text, and then we'll take a break for traffic and come back.
Of course.
Says, good morning, guys. I have to change my electrical wiring in the house. I have to change my plumbing in the house, including the drain pipes, and I want to renovate my basement. What order should I do this in? Let me repeat it. Changing electrical wiring in the house, changing the plumbing in the house, including the drain pipes, and wants to renovate the basement. What order should I do those in? Mull that over, Walter, and we'll come back. And you could talk to Walter on the phone as well if you have a question for him. 514-790-0800 here on the Home Improvement Show.
You might just need to tighten a thingamajig on the whatchamacallit. This is the Home Improvement Show on CJAD 800.
And use some Jigaloo, too. That always comes in handy. 920, good morning. 514-790-0800 is the number to call if you want to get some free advice on an issue you have at home when it comes to a renovation project. Something's broken, something's not working, foundation cracks. Sometimes, as you and I both know, we get stuck on one topic for an entire hour. Sometimes it's wiring, sometimes it's foundations, sometimes it's heat pumps.
That's right. That's right. It takes is one phone call and then
it spirals. Yeah. So, Walter, this text that came in, do you want me to refresh it? I'll do it for the sake of the listener. I have to change my electrical wiring in the house. I have to change my plumbing in the house, including the drain pipes. And I want to renovate my basement. What order should I do these jobs in?
Okay. That's a great question. There should be a bit of thinking in it before it's done. And if you have different subs doing different things, you have to have certain type of communication and coordination going on. Because the way I would like to do it would be to demolish the basement if you're redoing the whole basement, mm-hmm. and you're demolishing everything. So you expose the whole basement. And that gives the electrician and the plumber better access to his pipes and wires and everything else. It also gives you a chance to evaluate anything that is in the way that should also be factored in. When you demolish a basement reno, there are hidden things that might occur, like foundation cracks, like you just said, issues with French drain, pinhole cracks, all kind of things. So that will kind of tell you what you're going to get into. So there is a benefit as well for the basement renovation itself. And the fact that you're going to have trades thereafter, meaning when you do your basement, you're going to have drywall guys, plaster guys, painters. So when the electrician does holes upstairs to fish his new wires, you're going to have the trades already there when you do your reconstruction to repair these things thereafter. So you're not actually opening another site. It's all kind of, you're kind of mulching everything together at the same time. That's the advantage. Same thing goes for the plumber. The fact that they have an open canvas to work with in the basement gives them better access. They could do better slopage. They're not doing it into through small holes that they're doing. So they have much more liberty at work when they're, you know, doing their inclines for their pipes, and they probably might even do a better job at it. The other advantage would be if, depending where the electric panel is, if the electric panel is in the basement, again, you're going to have this much more better access for all the wires that are coming out from that web. And then you could, you know, make it possibly cleaner just because you have that span that you're working with that is bigger than you would, you know, because when you don't have that luxury, what you tend to do is you tend to fish the wires. So you're, you know, again, you don't want to do holes everywhere and demolish the whole basement as an electrician. So you're kind of limited on how clean your job could be. If you have that possibility of doing it through, you know, an open canvas like that, for sure, it's better. Then you do the reconstruction only after all the holes are done. So when the plumbing is completely done, when the electrical is completely done on all floors, not just in the basement,
right.
That's you bring in your reconstruction crew. And, you know, you can start from the top down to fix all the collateral damage that was caused by the plumbers and the electricians, and then off you go.
All right. There you go. Texter. No-name Texter. Hope that was some help for you. 514-790-0800 to the phone line. We go to Kim in St. Laurent. Hi, Kim.
Hi, how are you?
I'm very good. You good this morning?
Oh, yeah.
All right.
I have a question. Well, you know, there's that new law come in that you can't fix an old furnace anymore, and I'm on bi-energy with oil and electric. And so I've had a couple of entrepreneurs come in, and I just have a silly question. Some of them are telling me, you know, run it on emergency, get rid of the oil, and we'll do your system in the middle of December. And a part of me says, well, my bioenergy, I've got half a tank of oil. It's going to last me until the spring for sure. Wouldn't it installation be easier in the spring? What are the advantages or disadvantages of doing it now the way that they're saying to do it, or doing it in the spring?
There is, for you, there's absolutely no advantage in doing it now. Okay? Unless you tell me your oil furnace is in very bad shape and it's going to break down any day now.
Oh, it could probably last another 5 years.
Then here's what I'm going to tell you. The law goes into effect. So if you have an oil furnace that is functioning, you can keep it functioning until you run it to the ground before you're obliged to change it. Where you are obliged to change it when it comes time to change it, and you're not allowed to replace it by a new oil tank. But if, let's say, you can buy another 5 years out of it and it's well and efficient and nice and good and working good and consuming good, then you don't need to technically change it. But let's say you just want to change it because you want to be updated to whatever the laws are immediately, then wait till the spring. Because like you said, that half a tank will probably ride you all the way to the spring. If you put it on emergency heat, you're probably going to run it to the ground within 2 weeks, and that's complete waste of money for you. That's number one. Number two, it does take about a whole day to do the transformation or the job. But sometimes, you know, if they have complications, and I've seen it, it might take a day or two or three in certain cases because they do something, it doesn't work, and they have to come back and you know, a mishmash of things, especially if they choose the wrong furnace with the wrong heat pump. So you might run into issues that may put you in a place where it's getting cold while they're fixing it.
Yeah.
So that's another disadvantage, because you don't know what, you don't know the unknowns. You don't know if the technician is going to do a good job. I mean, usually we are expecting them to, but that doesn't always run as smooth as you've probably might have heard about stories. Even here, callers call us all the time and they say, I've changed it 2 months ago and I still have problems with it. So at least if you do it in the spring, you have that time to get it done right without the stress factor that comes with it. Plus, you would have profited from all that oil that is still in your tank. So you would have saved a good portion of money there as well.
Right. One other question, if I might.
Yeah.
They're telling me that there's two how do you say it, subventions?
Subventions.
Subventions from the government, and you know, they could end any day now. And I don't know if that's a scare tactic or if you've heard anything about you know, that Renault Climat program?
Yeah.
If that's going to, you know, just suddenly die tomorrow, or do you think that the government's going to keep it going because they want people to get off of oil?
I haven't heard about anything about these subventions expiring soon. Usually they don't just, you know, do it overnight. They give a, you know, they say, okay, that will expire in that. In my opinion, they will extend it because there's a lot of people still on oil heat. So I believe it's more like a scare tactic than anything.
Okay. And why won't any contractor give a devis anymore? You can't get even an estimate of what they're including, what they're not including. They just say to you, oh, madame, it's a clé en main. Don't worry, we're going to take care of everything. And you don't know when they come in. One guy will tell you, oh, no, this is extra, and that one will be extra, and the other is extra when they get to it, you know. And I'm very confused because you can't get quotes that you could put side by side to evaluate. They won't even tell me, some of them, the model number that they're looking to put in for the $17,000.
Kim, you know what? We're up against the clock, so Walter has got your question. We're going to answer it on the air right after the news, and I'm going to let you go, and you can hear the answer on the air.
Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Bye-bye
now. 9:30 on the nose. Walter's coming right back with that and more of your phone calls, too, at 514-790-0800.
Whether you're handy or all thumbs, you're listening to the Home Improvement Show on CJAD 800.
Good morning. It's 9:35. Looks like the sun's making an appearance, as promised, according to the forecast. Don't like when they make a liar out of me, but yeah, we had some clearing on the way, and it looks like it's happening now. Decent-looking Saturday afternoon is on the way. Good morning, Walter Assey and Ken Connors. And before we get to the next call, Elma, hang on out there in Longueuil. But we'll just wrap up. We had Kim on the air just before the news break, and I guess she had one final question about, I guess she was expressing her frustration about trying to nail a contractor or renovator down on when it comes to specifics, I guess.
That's always a red flag. So yes, there is a misconception between contractors that you know I kind of want to address, because that's a problem that we're hearing about very often. Mm-hmm. If the contractor is busy, that does not give them the right to be dismissive for the client's requests. Mm-hmm. If you're too busy, don't take another request. But the fact that they're sought after is making them cut through the regular process of bidding on a job and the adequate and the ethical and the good business practice process. So if a contractor is not giving you what you want before you start the job, trust me, you're not going to get what you want when the job is started and finished. It's already a bad sign. The minimum that you are asking for as a consumer is to have things in writing. That's what's going to protect you. If it's a plan or a description or a specification or a contract, as detailed as possible, detailing the guarantees, the labor guarantee, the parts guarantee, clearly, not just in fine print, the model number, the serial number, the name of the brand, the strengths of the brand, how many BTUs, that's extremely important.
It's all in the details.
It's all in the details. And if you don't have that in writing, it doesn't matter how desperate you are to get the job done, move on to the next guy and the next guy and the guy after that. And yes, it might take you some time, but you will finally find that professional guy that will give you what you want as a consumer. Do not let the conditions of the market dictate you getting a job badly done. You're better off keeping what you have until you find the right contractor, okay? It's like settling for a girlfriend or a boyfriend. You know, if you don't settle for someone that is not the right person for you. Same thing when it comes to contractors. For that period of time that this contractor is doing the work for you, you're getting married. You're seeing each other every day. You're talking to each other every day. And sometimes for 2, 3, 4 months. So you better like your contractor and he better likes you back, right?
Words of wisdom. Thank you, Walter. Elma in Longueuil. It's Elma, right?
Yes. My question is about brick repair. My bungalow on one side has a hairline cracks in quite a few of the bricks. There is no water infiltration. And on one side of the bungalow, there are a couple of bricks that lost their surface.
Mm.
So I don't want to wait for trouble. I want to do something about it, but I don't know how.
Okay.
Like, have it done, like not do it myself.
Walter?
Okay. So deterioration in the facing of the bricks might mean that you have some type of repetitive water source that is affecting the brick surface, whether it's at the bottom of the bricks or at the top. The areas where the brick is deteriorating, where are they located?
Where are they?
Where the surface is missing is underneath the kitchen window.
Okay.
Like 4 or 5 bricks.
All right. So what I want you to look at is that windowsill. Because more often than not, that windowsill is either cracked or badly cocked between the two sills. And water is coming in and creating the degradation, deterioration of the bricks there. Mm-hmm. And the reason I'm telling you this is because even if we get them replaced, in a couple of years, they're going to deteriorate again. So we want to stop the source.
Yeah,
that makes sense. I didn't look for the caulking yet, but that makes sense, yes.
What you want to look for is not necessarily, well, the caulking is one, but mostly if there's any cracks in the sill itself, in the stone sill or cement sill, whatever you have there. You also want to look if there are two sills because the window is bigger and the joint in between is well caulked or well mortared. Okay.
Yes, I'm going to examine it. And then on one side of the house, it's where the morning sun comes on that side.
Okay.
There are quite a few bricks that have hairline cracks, like not in the cement in between, just sort of in the brick.
Okay. So I don't, the sun would have nothing to do with it.
No.
It's mostly due to some type of a structural movement. Now, if you follow down the cracks, are they all in the same line kind of cracks, or they are sporadic?
No, but they are all vertical.
Vertical, okay.
Yeah, but now not if, in a row, like here okay. and there. Like.
Okay, and if you go down to the foundation, do you see any cracks appearing on the foundation
no,
itself?
No,
okay. How about any windows, any lintels
no,
above windows?
No, it's next to the entrance door, next to the side door,
okay.
and around the side door.
Okay, so what we need to look for usually if there are any structural movements, and that could be due to many things. One of them could be a foundation crack. Another thing could be a support above a door or a window that is inadequately done.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, or sometimes mm-hmm. the metal support above the window or the door, because of lack of maintenance / paint, rusts
mm-hmm.
away. And now your support above it is inadequate.
Mm-hmm.
So the brick itself starts settling
mm-hmm.
because the metal plate that is sitting on is rusted.
Yeah.
So, you know, it caves a bit or moves.
Yeah.
And that could create you those cracks. And again, so...
What about the repair? Like, I had a person come and he asked me whether I want to redo all the walls.
No.
And I said, let me think.
No, the reason I'm telling you this is because I want you to go to the source of the problem. So you do it once, you do it right, you forget about it. So, and you know, most of the time when the brick repairs is addressed by the homeowner, they look at those bricks that are, you know, deteriorated, they get them changed, the cracked bricks, they get them replaced. That's the easy part. The
mm-hmm.
The more investigative part and the things where you really have to kind of review and analyze is why is this happening?
Why is this happening? I understand, yes.
You go to that source first, and then you just pop out those bricks that are cracked, and you replace
mm-hmm.
them,
mm-hmm.
And then you know that's the end of that story. You don't have to worry about anything else anymore. So there's no reason for you to replace the whole bricks.
Yes.
Where you might run into problems,
yes.
is to find the exact same brick.
Okay.
Yeah. Especially the houses, if it's built in the 70s and the 60s,
yeah.
A lot of them are discontinued. Especially there was a batch of brick that was done that was not great for our weather and they were known to deteriorate and break
okay.
apart. So these were discontinued.
My brick has sort of a textured surface.
So that might be the one that they don't do much of these days because
yeah.
it didn't work very well in that batch.
Yes.
So what you might have to kind of settle for is a similar looking brick.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Or sometimes what they do, and that's the trick, is they take the actual brick and they turn it around. So let's say that face is actually deteriorated. If the back of it is still good,
okay,
we'll use the back of it.
Oh, yeah, right.
And we'll put it back in place, and that it would not.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's another way that could
uh-huh.
be used. Same thing with the cracks. If there are just superficial cracks, we could potentially use it. Another trick, I'm just giving you a few things, because sometimes bricklayers will tell you, well, we can't find those bricks, we have to replace the whole house. What you do is you go to the your chimney stack or any place that is less visible, below a deck. You pop out a few of those bricks, and then you use those bricks in the visible areas and in the less visible areas under decks and so on and so forth. That's where you put the the matching brick.
Sneaky, I love it.
Yes.
I love it.
And in terms of cost, like, is it not more cost efficient to just strip out the whole side of the house and do it over?
Absolutely not. There are advantages, Elena. There are advantages in the sense that, let's say you have a house that have bad insulation.
No, it's not the case.
Oh, it's not the case, and no. Your remark will make sense. If I look at your wall and I say 35-40% of it is deteriorated and broken up and not in good, great shape,
yeah.
then I would say, okay, Elena's right. We should replace the whole thing because, you know, you're almost taking out the half of the wall anyways. Mm.
Yes.
But if it's sporadic here and there, believe me, it's nowhere near what it would have costed you to replace the whole thing.
Elma, we have to go, but
thank
you for the phone call and good luck with the job.
I thank you for the advice.
Oh, it's a pleasure
thank
to have you on
you
the
so
show.
Much.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. It's 9:45.
This is the Home Improvement Show on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
At 514-790-0800, number to call for the Home Improvement Show, like Michelle did out in Brossard. Hi, Michelle.
Good morning.
Good morning. What's this in my notes here? Dryer hose embedded in wall, it says.
So I have a very small space. It's 85 inches from the wall to the door opening. And in that space, I have a little sink, a 30-inch sink and a dishwasher, and then there is a tower of washer and dryer. And I have two questions. Is the hose that's behind the dryer is 4-inch hose. It's going to push out the appliances by 4 or 5 inches. It will be really a lot deep, further out than the counter depth, which is, I believe, 24 inches. Is it possible and okay to make a trough in the drywall to put, to embed that vertical part of the hose?
So yes, I mean, the drywall itself, just to kind of explain, what we want it to be there for is for as a fire coating.
Okay.
Okay. So if you have anything that is open, and your installation is exposed, as far as fire coating is concerned, you're not to code anymore. So you can't just keep, insulation exposed like that. So that's the number one issue that I would have with this.
Okay.
What we could recommend in cases like this is if you have it, if you can have it embedded, like you open up the wall, you have it embedded into the 2x4 structure or whatever 2x6 structure, depending on how old your home is, and you go up and then you kind of turn.
That's what we're doing. Yeah, we're turning over the cabinets.
Yeah, so do it this way, but don't keep it exposed. Kind of bridge it out like that and don't keep it exposed and then make it have a turn so it does not interfere with your cabinets and, you know, it, 4 inches is a lot in a small space.
It's going to lying above the cabinets, but I'm just wondering what is a way to make sure that it's not out by 5 or 6 inches beyond the counter. And that was the only thing that I thought is to embed that hose in the wall. So what would you suggest to use as a cover for that? We can't put drywall again.
You could use MDF panels.
MDF panels.
Yeah, you could use MDF panels just because it's easier and you don't have to plaster and what have you.
Okay.
The only thing I want to caution you from is that if you do have a 2x4 structure, two things are going to happen. If you have a 2x6, it's not as bad because a 2x6, you'll have the depth inside the wall. But if it's an exterior wall, it is problematic because you have already only 2 inches on the wall that you could use and you need 4 inches. So you're already going to be a bit bumped out.
Yeah.
That's going to be a problem.
Yeah.
So you might have to kind of jet out a little bit in the process. Or the other way, it's a bit more extreme, but you're going to shim the whole wall out, which is a lot of work.
Or we're too late now. We've already installed the cabinets. And so, because the other wall is not an outside wall, it's a bathroom wall on the other side. So it's an interior wall.
Okay.
So there's a chance that there's room. The other question I had for you, Walter, I'm sorry to ask the second question, is because the washer and dryer are stackable, but they're not one piece, is it advisable to put a shelf? They're held between two panels. Can you put a shelf that will hold the dryer and it will hold the two panels together and it will separate the washer and dryer in case of, servicing? You don't have to pull both of them out. Is that something that you advise?
I mean, you could. A lot of the stackables that you buy can also be unstackable. So a lot of them are just regular washer dryer, and you could just buy a kit to make it stackable, and that would be your best bet if you buy a system like that. Unless you already have the washer dryer, it's another story.
No.
But if they're made to be separate, then you don't have a problem. If it's this one piece that you buy, because there are also some of them that are just, they just come as one piece towers.
Like a tower. No, these are two pieces separate.
Yeah, so you can separate them. Yeah, you can separate them, no problem.
So is it better to use the system that they sell for like a track for the upper dryer, or is it better to put an actual shelf for it to sit on?
Always buy the system they sell, because that's the one that's really is proven to work. So any kit that you do it yourself usually is not really 100% guaranteed it's going to work.
Okay. All right.
Michelle,
thank you very much.
Are you out walking the dog?
I am. How did you know? Is it because he was barking away?
No, it sounded like just sounded like a dog walker on the phone.
Yeah, I am a dog walker.
That's why I call him multitasker as well, Michelle. Yeah. It's very impressive.
I had to get this call in today because it's happening today, so we don't want to miss our chance.
All right. Thanks,
thank you very much for the advice.
You're welcome. All right. We're going to sneak in John out in Pierrefonds, if you don't mind, Walter. We have about 3 minutes. John, ventilation and furnace, what's the issue?
Yes, it's actually, the issue is the ceiling height. I'm going to renovate my basement, my rec room, and it's the ceiling height. It's about 5'10", and I want it to be over 6 feet in the height from the floor. And there's ductwork there coming from my furnace, and I want to know, is it an easy job to, it's only a certain section that needs to be raised up or changed so that it gives me the better ceiling height in the basement?
Raised up is, it all depends on what you have above this. If you have those, what we call them, solives ajourées, so these are like the open, joists, and it's a rounded, type, ducting, it's not a difficult thing to do. If you have, the solid, joists, then yes, you can't make holes through that. So that makes it a lot more complicated.
Right. But does that sound like an expensive job to change one section of that ductwork?
Well, it's not a question of it's an expensive job. It's a question of how you're going to do it without losing too much efficiency. Because every time you make a turn, you're losing efficiency in the output of your furnace, right? So if you are doing it and you're going to make 3-4 new corners in the process, it's not... You're not doing it adequately as far as the output of your furnace or your ventilation or your blower for the fan. So you're decreasing the output tremendously if you're doing many corners. So it has to be...
No, there's no corners involved. It's a straight piece that's about 8 or 10 feet long.
Okay.
But if I make that smaller than the rest of the ductwork, that causes a constriction. That could be a problem, right?
Correct. That is correct. Okay. So what you need to do is you need to call a Ferblantier. These guys are like, they specialize in ducting.
Okay. Well, what is that in English, the name of that? What?
That's a very good question. I have no idea. Ferblantier. Metal workers, I guess, but they specialize in doing these types of things. And you know, because if you go straight to a ventilation guy, it's very seldom the ventilation guy does his own ducting.
Okay.
So if you can go straight to the source, you might get better service, and for sure you'll get better prices. 100%.
Okay, that helps a lot. Thank you very much, Walter.
My pleasure, sir.
John, thank you for the phone call. Walter, thank you for a very fast and efficient hour.
It's very fast indeed.
All right, he's back again next Saturday morning at 9 o'clock with the Home Improvement Show. Jimmy G, thank you so much. Lisa is ready to go. She's in the driver's seat for the car show. And again, the number is 514-790-0800. News is standing by.
The Home Improvement Show, brought to you by Electrica, Montreal's trusted team of home electrical experts. Electrica with a K.ca.